Hello everyone, welcome to the Under 30 Chit Chat, where we talk to Forbes Middle East 30 Under 30 listers who are changing the world around them and shaping the future of the region. I'm Layana Bushkayer, here with Waleed Daniel Deep, one of our 2021 listers. Thanks for being with us, Waleed.
Thank you for having me. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you again. So Waleed, since the last time we met in 2021, so many things have been changing and happening with your career and everything that you've been done. At that time, you were the co-founder of Hala Insurance, which shut down in 2023, I believe. Mm-hmm. And since then, you've already established another business. And you've already sold it.
Yes.
And before Hala and your new business, you were also the co-founder of Addenda.
Yes.
Which you sold it as well. So many things have been happening. But before we dive into, you know, the details of your story and the businesses, can you tell us about your story, how things have started? Take us to the beginning, maybe when you were a kid, what you were planning to do and how you reached to this
point. No, of course. First of all, thank you for having me. I've only recently figured out that I've always been building things. I just never really took it into consideration. So when I was 15, I started a poetry website without even knowing how to write poetry. That didn't make any money, so I shut that down. I had a then I had an online magazine in Jordan during my university years, which was kind of an attempt to have like Vice in the Middle East, if you're familiar with Vice.
Yeah,
I'm sure you,
yeah,
you
of
are.
Of course, yeah.
And that kind of picked up a bit with a bunch of writers, photographers, web designers, and all that stuff. And then in university, I had to travel to another country, so that shut that down as well. But I kept learning things as I was kind of doing that, and I had an opportunity to manage a lot of other peers and convince them to do things that I thought had potential to be great. So it was always that urge to create or to do something has always been there. Mm-hmm. And it only materialized into a structured format very recently, I'd say when I was 26, 27, 28, with Addenda to start with. The beautiful thing about all of the sales that took place is they were very coincidental. So Addenda was sold to a company that I wasn't sure was into this exact same space. It turns out they wanted to kind of enter it very aggressively. In terms of Call Me, which is the most recent thing I sold, was in the same idea. I pitched to someone to become a client, and then they ended up buying the company.
Well, we will talk about each business in details. But as far as I know, you are an engineer by education, and then you jumped into insurance.
Correct.
So, which to so many people, insurance is not that interesting of of a sector. So tell us about this move from, you know,
100%
to insurance.
So this is funny because I challenge you to find me any person who, while they were growing up, they said, "Mom, Dad, I want to go into insurance."
Exactly, which is
I don't think anybody does that.
Exactly.
So what happened was I didn't even want engineering either. It just happens that obviously as an Arab, my dad is an engineer. My aunts are engineers, my brother, my cousins, and my aunts' husbands are engineers. I was the black sheep by not wanting that. I actually wanted English literature.
Oh.
I'm kind of grateful that my dad forced me into engineering. Mm-hmm. It's very funny. But what happened was I did it for a year and a half. I worked for an engineering consultancy called WSP. Mm-hmm. And there, while I was in Qatar, I accidentally came across insurance, specifically loss adjusting, which is investigating accidents, whether they're large-scale fires and floods and construction accidents, which is where my insurance experience or my civil engineering experience is, all the way down to someone, you know, having a small fire in the house.
Yeah.
And it was a perfect fit. So I kicked that off in Qatar. I did it for a year and a half, and then I went to the UAE and did the same and realized just how much more manual insurance is than engineering, which was already a very physically intensive role. And that's where I thought, okay, I need to see if I can potentially change this.
Oh, and what do you, like, I know that, as you mentioned, that it's kind of a legacy of a sector, if we can call it that way. Things are done traditionally for the past, I don't know how many years. So what did you want to change through Addenda? What was your purpose or what did you want to do through Addenda?
It's a good question. I think at the beginning of it, I identified at a very high level that a lot of the operational processes were inefficient. So when it came to handling claims, when it came to, I can't find anybody who's had a positive experience with claims in insurance, whether it's a car accident or health insurance or whatever. Nobody walks out saying, this went really well. I feel people go like, oh, I tricked the insurance to thinking this, or oh, they accepted this. I didn't think they would. So I was naively thinking, is there a way I could change that from a conflict of interest to a relationship where the both parties are on the same side? And with Addenda, we pushed really hard towards helping insurance companies reconcile payments between each other for car accidents where they owe each other money. That picked up. It picked up where at a certain point, I think we had 9 insurance companies on board in the UAE, Kuwait, and Bahrain. But the problem there was that there's always going to be companies that don't want to pay each other money. So it's still, I don't think technology was the solution for a lot of these legacy problems. Some of them is a regulatory issue.
Yeah,
and that's what some of the issues we had with HALA as well.
You mentioned HALA because after Addenda, you sold it and then you tried again in the insurance market to, you know, change and create a change. So you established HALA. HALA, as a, I was a customer, I was one of customer, one of HALA's customers myself. And as a customer, and I've heard also from other customers, everyone was satisfied. But what was happening in the background? Why did HALA not work, in your opinion?
So to be clear, Addenda and HALA were more or less the same company. We pivoted from Addenda to HALA and then sold the source code and the IP and the customer base to an Australian company called XA Group. What happened in HALA is the way I define product market fit today is not the same way as I defined it before. Before, for me, product market fit was, does Layan like it? Now there's two more elements. Is, does Layan like it? Am I the best price in the market? And am I making money?
Yeah.
So Layan liked it. I was often the best price in the market. I wasn't making money. So so that and this was in the kind of the hubris of 2021, 2020, when everybody was fundraising ludicrous amounts of money and just burning capital. I think whenever you would raise a bit of money, Google would pop a champagne because they're like, okay, now I'm gonna get half their fundraise because they're gonna put in advertising. But what happened was a couple of things. The first one was, like I said, product market fit in terms of a lot of your competitors were burning capital and they had a lot more money to do so. And number two was, from a regulatory perspective, I never just wanted car insurance. We always wanted to go into building a, to have HALA be your peace of mind kind of SaaS. So
you had house insurance as well. You've introduced it to the region, I think, one of the very few
people. So we had Dritl home insurance. Yeah. It was already there, but we wanted to change it that you could pick on a per item basis.
Yeah.
Right. And that was not really there.
Exactly.
But from a regulatory perspective, we'd had a lot of challenges with doing that. So. Can I change the policy wording? Can I make it different than whatever the standards are by, as per the central bank? I wanted to bundle home, car, health, travel, life, you know, your wife's wedding ring and your kid's education, all that stuff into one monthly peace of mind subscription like Netflix.
Yeah.
But when I was unable to do that, we realized, okay, listen, we have to respect our investors' money. This is not what we fundraised for. And we returned investors' money. But from there, I picked up a couple of other ideas and I'm happy to tell you about what are the other ones that I've been working on.
We'll absolutely talk about it. But you mentioned returning investors' money, which not a lot of people or startups do when they shut down. And I remember when HALA shut down and you returned the money, it was actually covered by so many news agencies and, you know, press companies, because it's not the thing we hear about. So why did you decide to do that?
Look, when you look back at it, I think with venture capital, it's a bit different than angel investors. So with venture capital, a smaller return on investment is better than zero return on investment. I think they only focus on really the best hitters, which is whoever gives you that Tabi, Kitopi, Tamara kind of return on investment. And I didn't want to be Arabic Ibit on my shareholders, and I
have burden.
To respect a burden on my shareholders. I have to respect them and respect their money. So not everybody would agree to this kind of thought process. Some would say, no, you have to keep pivoting until you find a solution, and this is effectively giving up. Yes and no, but I think unless you've experienced it yourself, it's very difficult to kind of make a decision there yourself.
Yeah. Absolutely. So between 2018 to 2023, you were trying so hard with the insurance sector. Things did not work out. So you shut down HALA and you moved to a completely new thing again.
Yes.
You've established Call Me, which was so interesting because you've built it in 3 weeks, according to what you say, and you sold it in 3 weeks just after launching.
Yes.
So tell me about that. What is Call Me? How did 100%. That happen?
So it was an experiment. And if you look at, I posted a couple of videos about it. The intention was, I want to build something in public and see if I can spend zero marketing and get kind of get a customer base and get a user base in a marketplace without spending a lot of money to do so. So the thought was build it in public, bare bones, show people exactly what it is, don't sugarcoat it. And I would get a lot of feedback from users to change it, to fix this, to update that. People who wanted to become customers, people who wanted to become experts on the platform. Let me just say what Komi is very briefly. It's basically a platform to talk to some of the top experts in MENA who are otherwise unavailable. Mm-hmm. The idea was, can I make Komi the new Forbes list? If I may, okay?
Yeah.
And the way I thought about that was, okay, you have the CFO of ADNOC Drilling, you've got the CEO of Washman, you've got a bunch of other people who are super well known in the space, and they want to give back both their time, but I want to respect their time. So a lot of them are donating their time to charity. So if someone comes and says, hey, I want to pick your brains, okay, pay for it. You're not paying me, you're paying a charity, right? And this coincided with some of the issues that were taking place or the genocide or the war in Gaza.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make sure that I could donate either from my side or from any of the experts' side as well to kind of help with it.
Mm-hmm.
This was kind of the thought behind Komi. What happened then was I did the, with the help of ChatGPT and other AI tools, from logo to FAQ to website to services to sales, customer support, all of that stuff. It was kind of a one-man show. Yeah. I had a friend who helped me out with a bit of coding as well. I was trying to figure out my target audience and see who was exactly my customer base. So I approached founders. At early stage, founders didn't want to pay or couldn't afford to pay.
Yeah.
I approached management consultants, but they already had individuals or companies working with them, like Alpha Insights and others. So then I approached accelerators and incubators, and I hit jackpot. Brink is a company that's based in Hong Kong that has several accelerators in the MENA region, some in Saudi and some in the UAE. They're working with MBRIF here. And I think they had in mind an intention to build exactly to the dot, to the brand style and donations and all that stuff what I had built. So instead of them reinventing the wheel, we agreed that they would acquire it, including all of the, you know, the customer base, the branding and the technology stack as well.
Yeah.
And that transaction took place very quickly. And I'm very happy to kind of work with Brink.
So Waleed, after building all of these companies and shut downing some, selling others in different sectors, so all of these trials and errors, if I may call it, can you tell us where do you stand today?
Yeah, I tried 9 to 5. So I tried working for a VC here in the UAE, one of the prominent VCs in the region, actually, for about 5 months. And this was at the same time it coincided with Komi.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, it was kind of a contract consultancy, so I could work on Komi. And I figured, I don't know if this is exactly for me right now at this point in life. I still have more energy to build. So I definitely want to build. And one of the spaces that appealed to me a lot was the men's healthcare space. I've seen a lot of things happen in the, I've seen a lot of things happen in the women's healthcare space, whether it's to do with skincare or pharmaceuticals or otherwise. And I thought, look, there are things today in men's healthcare, but I want to see how can I be super scientific about it and very efficient for the busy man. So what I wanted to start with was I wanted to focus on hair loss and weight loss as a starting point. And I want to have a brand for an entire gender, so to speak.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. And how do you plan to do that? Because this requires maybe like a very scientific background. So how are you building this? What kind of, you know, people are you working with?
Mm-hmm. So the intention here is to see, I mean, there's in the US, there's about 5 or 6 companies who have done something similar.
Yeah.
There's Keeps, there's Hims, there's Ro.co and a few others.
Mm-hmm.
What they really do is, for example, for hair loss, there's something called minoxidil, which is a generic medication, and they've branded generic medication to compete with pre-existing very pricey brands that have the exact same chemical.
Mm-hmm.
My intention is to see, can I bring a affordable brand that you could trust as much as the others and really sell it to the Arab man, which has a cultural understanding, which can fit an Arab man's hair or hairstyle. And from a weight loss perspective, I want to think of the same thing. Can I focus on the culture? Can I focus on how best practices should be from a scientific approach? Can we debunk on TikTok? Can we stitch videos that someone is saying something about an Ozempic trend, or you can just find it in a pharmacy and buy it from there? And I don't think anybody should do that. So really, it's I am not a scientist myself, but yeah. I have a habit of hiring people who are much smarter than me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, where I can really do well. And my intention here is to find the smartest scientists in the room, the smartest marketers in the room, the smartest operators in the room, and just build with them again.
That's interesting. And I look forward to seeing how that comes, because it's very interesting to focus on men's wellness, as you mentioned, because we have so many brands, as you mentioned, for women, dedicated for women. So to think about the other side, it's very interesting. And I look forward to that happening. But Waleed, can you tell me that I think now you're 32, right? You've already done so much for your age. Some people are still figuring it out. Can we say that also Waleed is still figuring out his way in life, of finding his passion, or do you already know what's your passion?
No, I'm definitely still figuring it out. I think it changes. What frustrates my wife is it changes every 15 minutes. So no, I'm still figuring it out. And I wouldn't even consider, not to be hard on myself, but I wouldn't consider it success per se. I think I've done a lot of challenging things that have been an experience for me. But I still think that there's a lot of learning for me to go and my biggest goal here is to always sit down with people who are smarter than me and learn from them. It's very important for me to, although I talk a lot, as you can see,
yeah.
It's important for me to always identify if I can learn something from someone smarter than me and just sponge, take it like a sponge and learn from them and immediately try it. The only thing I really think I am good at is jumping into something and actually starting it, as opposed to constantly debating whether it's a good idea or not. And often enough, the idea is not good. So the men's wellness idea, the space I'm interested in after enough research might not be the right space, but it could crack open what the right space is.
Interesting. And through all of these things, we've talked about the business challenges you've faced in each business. But how about the mental challenges of building new things, getting excited and things not working out, and then, you know, jumping from an industry to another? How is Waleed doing through all of this?
Look, I think having friends and family who understand who you are as a person and what you want to build, who are your support system, is very important. At the same time, I think there's a facade that people have around the entrepreneurial journey about the hustle culture and all that stuff and burnout and how important it is to just keep working hard, where to a certain point you forget about the importance of other people.
Yeah,
and you have to understand that you're not alone. You're not the main character. It's not a single player game. And in my case, for example, I got married recently or last year, and now there are other responsibilities I have. So there's a ticking time bomb for how long you could keep experimenting before you have to settle on something and build a family.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm well aware of that. So it reminds me of that the old saying where in Arabic, and you can fix it, please. البحر أمامكم والأرض وراءكم, or is it the other
way around?
الأرض أمامكم والبحر وراءكم. So for me right now, this is exactly where I am in my headspace. It's not just about passion. It's about where do I want to be in the next 5 years? And what does it mean for my partner, my family, and potentially my children in the future?
That's the reason I think we have you here with us out of so many people on our lists is that the idea of, because people think that people who get on Forbes go through a very maybe easy journey. They already have the money, they already have the capital to build these things, and things are always bloomy and successful, but you've been through all of these ups and downs. So it's very interesting to also mention that, you know, you're still figuring things out, you're still experimenting, if I may say. But can you tell me about, you know, the biggest challenge or the one moment that you still remember that maybe have changed your perspective to how things are going, you know, now?
Yeah, I think one of them is definitely realizing that at a certain point, not having product market fit is one.
Yeah.
But the beauty there is the team members you have with you and how they support you in that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you a small example. And I know I'm kind of sneakily not answering your question, but I'll tell you what I mean. So in my case, with Hela, we fired the entire team, 45 people, right, when you shut down.
Yeah.
What we tried to do was, can we help all the team members find jobs? And that kept my relationship with the entire team so well, to the extent that I'm actually, what I'm building now, I'm building with a lot of ex-Hella team members who will come back, right?
Yeah.
And it's so important for me to enjoy working with people you like. I think it's the people, the product, and then the success of the company. They come in that, in that capacity. Of course, I've made mistakes with some team members, and I've made mistakes with ex-colleagues in Hella. I'm not saying I haven't.
Yeah.
But I'm super excited about what's to come and what I can build with these guys, because they're people I trust already. And having gone through the cycle of setting up a company, building, knowing who to talk, how to pitch, and all that stuff, and also the financial model that actually works. Right now, I think data to consumer has a lot of potential in the market. And I think e-commerce is about to have even a bigger boom than it did before in the MENA region, because it's still catching up with the rest of the world. So I think I'm at that right point to kind of kick this off.
And can you tell us, you know, now after sharing all of these things, how do you define success? Because I'm sure at a certain stage you thought maybe success is building a company and, you know, getting funding, a huge funding, or generating revenue, or I don't know, you know, changing an industry. But now, how do you define success? What is success?
I'm going to define it in two levels. The first one is success on a commercial basis, which is still having a return for your shareholders and maximizing their returns. Building something that is useful for people and has a difference. That's the second level. So building something that people actually love using. And that's, again, like I said, I figured that out in Hella, but I didn't figure out the first part.
Yeah.
And right now there's a third part, which is finding pure joy in building that. So it's like there's three successes I look for.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeling that I may be on the right track. I could be wrong, but I have a feeling.
Waleed, what kind of legacy do you want to leave behind? You know, I'm not talking maybe just about business legacy, but what kind of a thing that Waleed wants to maybe change and maybe in the world, or leave behind, you know, when people remember Waleed?
I'm not sure I have an answer for it right now, and I'm going to be honest about that. At the beginning you asked me, you know, am I still figuring it out? I think that's the biggest thing I'm still figuring out, because is my legacy insurance, is my legacy men's health, is my legacy something else? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what defines a legacy still. I think I'm a bit maybe too young to think of it.
Yeah.
Maybe if there's Forbes 40 under 30 and I come back and we can talk about that. But no, I'm still figuring it out. So I think so long as I have people around me who are happy and who I love and they love me and they're healthy, but I don't think that's a legacy yet. I'm still learning. Okay. Still figuring it out.
So Waleed, we talked about success and how do you see it, at least at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
But for Waleed, after experimenting and doing so many things, did you figure out what kind of, you know, your weakness point through all of this?
Yeah, of course. And it's something I think a lot of my previous investors, co-founders, friends and family have also considered, is I have unlimited amount of optimism that sometimes needs to be contained.
Mm-hmm.
So previously in Hella, Adenda, and other ideas I worked on with my brother, he was the person who was the realist, right? My head was in the clouds very often. While that is a weakness, I don't want to completely remove it. Reason being, if you're not a hopeless optimist, you will always believe that there's no potential for you to build the thing you're building.
Yeah.
It takes a certain level of imagination and unrealistic optimism to think that you could acquire an insurance license after they stopped issuing them, for example.
Yeah.
Or to think that you could introduce buy now, pay later after others have tried 2-3 years ago and it didn't work, right? Or if it's not working in other countries. In my opinion, I think what I'm trying to do now is contain that optimism and have a more structured approach towards it, but still have it be a weapon I have as well.
Yeah, and I think the reason, you know, you've been trying these things out and so many things have actually worked out is the optimism.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think for some others, maybe from the beginning, from the first trial, they would just, you know, stop and give up if if you didn't have that optimism, I think you would have been there now and you'd have tried all of these things. It's very interesting what you have been doing, Waleed. And again, I wanted to, you know, to have this chit chat with you because many of our viewers or readers view the people on our lists, or especially the under 30s, and, you know, as people who got there easily, who, you know, have things figured out, and that things are so easy to, you know, but things are not that easy. Things may change. Things keep changing. So I look forward to, you know, things happen, you know, that to that new thing that Waleed is building. Hopefully you will get to share that with us very soon. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.